are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, yes, this is Grant, and we are back yet again. I've got another creator that I'm excited to talk to. You may know her work in the Hans Vogel is Dead webcomic and assorted Kickstarters, which hopefully you have read because it's really good, and you should put your eyes on it. I have Sierra Barnes with me. Hello, Sierra. How are you?
Woot woot. I'm doing great, Grant. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And I just want to ask, are you in a basement of some sort?
No, I'm in the first story of my little duplex, but it looks like a basement because most of our light is natural light, but the sun has gone down.
Oh, that's the best, though. Overhead lighting, like the gross ones, it's worthless. Hate
it. It is, yeah. I can turn on a lamp and be slightly less goblin, but it's...
Well, you know, as already discussed beforehand, this is all goblin mode all the time.
Yeah, we maxed out the goblin here, so you can't see me, but my ears are especially pointed right now. It's crazy.
I wanted to compliment you on that.
Thanks. Yeah, I put my little sharp teeth and everything in. It's a big day.
They do look especially like pointy, as though they could rend the flesh off a caribou.
It's exactly what I'm going for. You know, everyone, when they tell you that you want to dress for the job that you want, not the job you have.
Goblin, number one with a
goblin,
bullet.
Goblin, number one. So, if my boss is listening to this, no, you're not.
No, you're not. Well, I like to imagine that secretly, the dark web, this is huge. And like everyone's listening. But in reality, it's like maybe three people.
I hope it's like the nice web. I don't want it to be like the dark web. I want it to be like the nice warm comics community who will then be like, wow, this was great. And then clap nicely.
Or maybe America Online's children's setting.
Well, maybe not kids. I swear.
Well, Sierra, I have a burning question. I want to know, as a goblin, where did you grow up?
That's always a like question, like, well, mostly in Northern California. I was actually born in Texas and spent like a hot 6 months there, so don't ask me about it. I don't remember. According to family legend, my mom was so miserable that she took me and went to her family in Reno and was like, we're moving out of Texas. So we moved to California. We were in Southern California for a while and then moved up to Napa. So I grew up around all the grapes.
For the 6 months you were in Texas, was that during like summer months?
I was born in December, so no.
It was still that bad.
Yeah, it was rain and bugs. Again, I don't remember any of it. I was a baby, so I didn't get a vote.
I'm so disappointed that as a 6-month-old, you didn't recall.
Everything. I was busy thinking baby thoughts, you know, deep baby thoughts.
Disappointing.
About the environment and stuff. I don't know.
So the Napa Valley is primarily known for wine. I have to assume that you must have tried it earlier than you should have.
My family had a very lax view of alcohol, so it was definitely one of those things where, like, growing up, like, assorted relatives would try and get me to try things before definitely was legal. So alcohol wasn't like a cool forbidden thing. Alcohol was like the thing. Like, I have a very vivid memory of like running at my grandparents' place and scraping my knee, and my grandfather pulling out a bottle of vodka, taking a swig, and then pouring some over my knee.
Oh, that's hardcore.
He's from Lithuania, so it's like a different vibe, I guess. But like, yeah, Napa is not like as glamorous. It's basically just a small town that's really expensive now. Like,
oh no, really?
It's super agricultural if you get outside of the like touristy areas. So there wasn't really a lot to do for kids. I was really into sports and 4-H. So I raised animals and we were out in the county. It's a lot of animal barf in my childhood for sure.
Oh no, like I have friends that did 4-H, and the thing is, like, from the outside, everyone wants to like laugh and poke fun and stuff, but that's hard work, dude.
You learn a lot as a kid. Like, I have sort of a like mini rant about how like everyone should be involved in agriculture somehow in their life and just like understand how food comes from, because the few years that I was raising, I raised market lambs and I raised Angora goats. And it was an eye-opening experience for sure of just how much work an animal like that takes.
Oh
And you
gosh,
know, they
yeah.
make you like, we went to the county fair and showed our animals, and you get up in the little outfit and stuff, and that's fun. But for most of the year, you know, you're up at 6 to feed them, and sheep have to be fed at the same time every day. So you got to be feeding them at 6 exactly and 6 exactly, and you got to take them for walks, and you know, they're animals, so they get sick. And one time I was like in middle school, and my sheep was colicking, where it coughs so hard that its intestines come out of its butt,
Oh my
basically.
gosh.
And I was with the guy whose property we kept the sheep on, because there were like a group of us that had sheep, so we all had them together.
Right.
And you know, I'm like, should we call the vet? Like, what should we do? And he's like, the vet's not going to get here in time. You just got to put it back in. So just
Oh my gosh.
put it back in. You haven't lived until you're, you know, just.
Reinserting sheep guts via anus.
Yeah, it was unpleasant.
That's the
I'm
most
sorry. I feel like when
diplomatic
you're
thing.
like, here's the weird kid stuff, I was like, here's the you work on a farm and you learn all kinds of things.
Well, that's like one of those things where everyone should take part in that and working in the food service.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
Because
you see things.
until you've gotten your hands dirty in those two regards, like you'll treat everyone who handles food a lot nicer.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things where like, especially with meat and like animal products, like I think you should have an appreciation for the animal and
Oh,
how it's treated.
absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a buddy who used to live in northern Michigan. Her family owned a farm with some cattle. And she said she's never eaten a steak or a burger unless she's known the cow's name. Is that something that
No, I'm the exact opposite.
resonates with you?
I like my mom thought that that was going to happen to me. She was like, you're never going to eat lamb. And she was like, I, you know, she didn't really like lamb to begin with, but she was like, after I've, you know, spent all this time with this animal. And I was like, no, I know what it ate. I know that it had a good life. Like, I would prefer to know the animal that I ate. Like, when I lived in Austria for a short period of time,
Oh,
after I
wow.
graduated college, I was on a Fulbright scholarship, and I
Oh,
lived in
yeah, NBD.
it was a teaching scholarship. There was like a whole situation. I had like applied for a different scholarship, and then the war in Ukraine started, and so I couldn't go on that scholarship. So it's like a whole situation after college. But I went to Austria, and I was in Upper Austria, which is a super rural, and it was relevant for things that I studied, which was really unfortunate because I studied Nazis. So I was like, oh great, I live in the middle of the state with all of the concentration camps and Linz, Hitler's favorite city. But it's I sorry, Upper Austria is a great state. I loved it. It's beautiful. Lots of rolling hills, great hiking. I feel the need to like defend it, because all of the kids who went to Vienna were like, ooh, we're in Vienna and fancy. And all of us who got stuck out in the rural areas, they like looked down on. So Upper Austria life, Mufiatlish, living that thug Upper Austrian life. But we would like, there was like a little butcher shop that I would go to, and I would know like the fields where all the cows came from
Oh,
that I
that's
was getting.
wild.
And it was just a really nice little experience of taking my bags, because you had to bring your bags everywhere, and picking out my cuts and listening to all the other older Austrian ladies with the thickest dialect I've ever heard, like gossip. And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying, but it's very serious business for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, when you said you did sports and 4-H when you were younger, did you show artistic sensibilities back then?
Oh yeah, for sure. I've been drawing, doing like since I can ever remember. My mom is a fine artist.
Okay.
So it was like,
Not when you were a 6 month old lazy baby, though.
No, when I was like, well, okay. So when I was little, my mom did like illustrations for books, and apparently I would. One time, I came very close to death when my mom had a finished book illustration, and I grabbed a crayon and helped, and colored all over the illustration. And this was back in the day when like you couldn't email things; you had to like put it in FedEx and ship it across the country to New York.
Yeah.
And I came extremely close to death that day. And looking back on it, for sure, yeah, I would have thrown the baby out the window. Would have been sad.
Oh
but...
my gosh.
So I've been doing this since I was a kid.
Did you keep that piece?
I don't. I think we still have it somewhere. I don't know if she's done something with it.
Burned it in effigy.
I mean, she did like paint over it, so the damage was mitigated. But according to family legend, if you look in the right place, you can see the crayon marks.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Right.
Mostly it meant that I got to play with some really expensive colored pencils when I was a kid.
Oh yeah. Now, when you were developing as an artist, were you leaning more towards traditional then because your mom had all the stuff?
I kind of drew with what was available. I always thought the digital art was like super cool. But like obviously back in when I was younger, the equipment was pretty expensive.
Yeah.
I didn't get my first tablet until undergrad. And then I was still kind of like drawing on the side, making comics on the side, and just kind of piddling around. I mean, very self-taught. But once I got that tablet, I was like, heck yeah, I never have to scan anything again. Forget this. I'm out. And now I like I went to grad school and I had an inking professor, Chris Kohler, represent. And he did his damnedest to get me to do traditional art. And I really appreciate it because I learned a lot from him. Mm-hmm. But I am very sad to say that I probably haven't done traditional art since spring of 2020.
Oh my gosh.
I do want to get back to it at some point, but it is—it's just a lot easier to grab the iPad or the tablet, and since all of my comic stuff is on that, and that's everything with the deadline, you know, that's what you use.
Oh, that's wild! And when did you first start getting into comics?
Oh man, like reading them.
Or just yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, like since I was little, like I remember reading Tintin. In you know, sitting down in the library, like reading Tintin is one of like my earliest kid memories, and Garfield I think was one of them. Although I graduated out of Garfield really quickly.
Tintin is having adventures. This cat is staying at home and eating.
I mean, I was into Garfield, and then a librarian saw me checking out. Like they only had you know two or three Garfield books, and the librarian saw me checking them out like week after week, and she was like, "If you like comics, maybe you should try this other comic." And you know, then I had Tintin and Asterisk and Obelisk, and my dad was an army brat, so he grew up with Asterisk and Obelisk.
Oh, that's cool.
But he saw them in German, so I thought they were German comics for the longest time because I'd only seen them in English and German. And I was a little sad to find out that they were Belgian. No offense to the a little offense to the Belgians, but
yeah, your European opinions are very strong.
This is what happens when you study history. You get spicy takes on everyone because all you have are receipts.
Yeah, that's okay. Leading this is almost full circle back to Hans Vogel's Dead. Like, when did this history bug just dig into you?
Oh, like day one. I've always been interested in history and dead people and stories and. There's this like sort of weird, my family is always was very big on family history and mythology. And there's, yeah. You know, a lot of overlap between things that are true, things that somebody told you were true, things that are not really true, but, you know, Auntie Jessie told you, and it's not like you're going to call her a liar. So, you know, so like that sort of weird mixture of like folklore and history and living memory has always been part of my life and always fascinated me. And I thought that that was something sort of unique to my family, like growing up, because I had a lot of friends who were like, wow, your family's weird. I'm like, yeah. But like growing up, I just sort of realized that that's how the entire world works. And yeah, that's how history works on a macro scale. So I think it's neat. It's all I want to make comics about.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did your interest in history and your interest in art start to overlap?
Man, I remember trying to like make middle school was around the same time that I started like having limited, like early high school, limited internet access. Like my parents were very much like, no, we don't really want you online and having a presence. But I learned that there were comics on the internet that you could get for free.
Yeah. So
it was all over. And I was reading, oh man, Gunnar Krieg Court, which I'm still reading. I like loved that. I was reading The Dreamer. I just found these troves of comics that were about like weird history and mythology stuff. And that wasn't like comics that I could find in the library. Like a lot of the library comics were Superman and Batman, which was fine. It wasn't really for me. But this whole world of webcomics, I was hooked instantly. And I was like, if I can do that, like, if I could just, like, I remember very distinctly in high school going, if I can just make a webcomic, that'll be the moment that I've made it. And high school was when I had the first idea for Hans Vogel. And I, like, at first, as soon as I had, like, the title and the idea for the comic, I was like, it's going to be a webcomic. I'm going to make it a webcomic.
When did you start working on it then?
Like 2010.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
It's been through a lot of iterations. My first like idea for it, Hans was a Hessian soldier in the American Revolution, and he like gets separated from his unit and ends up getting picked up by a bunch of Pennsylvania Dutchmen.
Oh wow.
And he like kind of has to like make friends and stuff. I didn't get very far with that draft because frankly it didn't have a lot of like emotional resonance, but I did have enough to reach out to a group of reenactors who were reenacting Hessian like troops at the Battle of Trenton, and they were very nice and answered all my questions, so shout out to you guys if you're still there. But I was very earnest about it, but then I kind of like I had the title and I had the sort of character of Hans, and I just kind of let him sit for all of my undergrad career because I had to like percolate. And then when I graduated and went to Austria, that's when I was really like, okay, I really want to make this comic. I'm gonna start asking people about stories. I took a lot of notes. I took a lot of notes on dialect, took a lot of notes on traditional costumes. I went on hikes, took a lot of pictures. I made sure to stop at every war memorial in every town I went to and take pictures.
Oh, cool.
Very cool. I have a ton of World War One and Two because they're usually the same memorial photos. Too many, maybe.
Yeah. Now, is Hans Vogel an actual historic person?
So there are actual historical people named Hans Vogel. The character is not based off of any of them. Hans is a super common German name, which is why I chose it, because a lot of the fairy tale protagonists are named Hans. And Vogel means bird.
Oh.
All of the names in Hans Vogel are puns. So John Bird, the pilot, and there's a lot of like bird-related visual puns in there. He spends all of the first volume covered in the assorted plane fluids that he crashed in. And the German term for an unlucky person is a Pechvogel, which literally translates out to a bird covered in tar.
Huh.
So Hans is literally the Pechvogel, which I thought was really funny. And I'm sure there are like two other people in the world who would get it and find it funny. But when you're drawing a 272-page graphic novel by yourself, you got to keep yourself entertained. That's you've got to put these things in for you.
Did you anticipate it was going to be this work intensive?
Oh, I thought it was going to be much longer. I had originally planned for like 10 volumes. I was like, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life because I'm insane. I have been talked down to 3 volumes, which I think is a much healthier, normal existence. But I had always seen it as a sort of Odyssey style, like, guy goes on journey and encounters wild things, because that's a lot of, like, sort of the literature that inspired me. Again, someone has talked me down from it. I was like, if you look through my notes over the years, I'm like, he visits a castle and he meets Nosferatu, and there's a whole vampire arc, and there's like da 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 da. I have since taken out the vampire arc, unfortunately. But
why? I want you to speak for all webcomic creators around the globe. Why do you people insist on doing more work than you need to do?
Because it's about telling a story. And that's what I love about webcomics versus like other kinds of comics, is that other, like print comics, you have to do the whole comic and then you give it to a publisher and then, you know, they work their magic. But webcomics, you get to be telling it, like the process of telling the story is what's fun to me. I love to be in the moment, to have the audience reactions, to like see that play, hear people talking about it. And when you do a webcomic, you're, you know, recently releasing one page at a time, but that like schedule allows people to experience it and react in real time. And that helps me to like be in the moment and feel like I'm telling it to a group of people. Having it be sort of print is different. The whole process of telling this story is just done by myself and no one can see it except for like little snippets, because, you know, an NDA or whatever. And then by the time that it's released, you know, it's like several years after you've actually finished writing it. So people will be like, oh, you know, on page whatever, when this thing happens, you know, that was really cool. And you have to go, oh, but like, making a webcomic, you got to be a little bit insane to make a webcomic. And I say that lovingly, you know, like you got to be invested in the story and you got to love doing it. And by doing it, I mean like physically drawing the pages and inking and coloring. And you got to at least love one part of that. You don't have to love all of it.
What was the worst day you ever had while crafting this webcomic?
Like related to the webcomic?
Yeah, like the equivalent of young Sierra drawing all over her mother's finished product. Oh man,
there have been a few. I had to reformat this damn comic so many times because, well, you know, when I started it, I didn't think that I would ever be putting it to print. So I didn't do things like bleeds or a consistent page size. So like in the first 24 pages of chapter one, there were like at least 8 pages that were a completely different size and DPI than the rest of the pages for no discernible reason. So that was a fun thing to discover. I also, in chapter 5, there's one page that I had finished and I had drawn a bunch of extra stuff on it because I was intending to use that as like resources for other pages and the copy paste. Because there's a bunch of taxidermy animals on the wall, and I was like, I'm not redrawing all these taxidermy animals. Absolutely not. You know, if I draw one stag head, it's going to be good enough for the rest of this chapter. And sometime in the midst of like 2 a.m. working on a different page, copy paste, I flattened all the layers and saved it, and then didn't realize it until like 3 days later. So I had to go back and redraw the entire thing. Again, just deeply, deeply, that was probably the worst moment actually, because I reopened the file to copy paste something and I saw that I had done that. And I don't even remember like actually saving it, because I thought that I was careful about not doing that. I just remember opening the program, looking at it, closing the program, standing up, walking around the kitchen, sitting back down, opening the file again, and staring at it for like 10 minutes while I contemplated quitting comics, quitting art. Just, there are a lot of other things that had happened, and I was just like, this is it. Like, I'm, forget this, except I didn't say forget.
You can say the word.
I fucked. I was like, fuck this, I'm out. Like, I can't do this. This is, and then I, you know, several days later ended up ponying up and redrawing it. And yeah, it's never as bad as the initial meltdown, but like,
oh yeah.
boy howdy, you know, you gotta have a few melt if you haven't had a meltdown drawing your comic, you know.
The phrase bone weary comes to mind.
Truly bone weary. In German you say todmüde, which is like, it's just dead tired, like dead exhausted. And that was where I was. You get the dry eye from like not blinking for several mm-hmm. hours, and then you know that that's it's time to go to bed.
Was there a particular day that you feel like you kicked that comic's ass like three ways from Sunday?
Oh, for sure. There's definitely several panels that even like several years down the road, I'm like, yeah, this fucks severely, actually. This in chapter one, there's a dog fight. And the Spitfires are swooping out of nowhere to attack Hans and his squad. And it took me for fucking ever to draw those Spitfires because the wings are not exactly square. They're round, they're elliptical.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a very specific like angle of the ellipsis that the wings have to be. And if they're not, they do not look like a plane. They look like a messed up pancake. So it took me forever to get the wings right. But once I got the wings right and I found some good references, then it was just like it clicked and I was drawing those planes and I was like, hell yeah, dude, I'm going to do this forever. I'm going to draw planes forever. And then I haven't drawn a Spitfire since chapter one, which was in 2015.
I think you should do some for warm-up exercises.
I will not. I'm going to have to do like another flashback chapter where he's fighting a Spitfire in like 2 years. And this process is going to start all over again. I'm going to cry. Or worse, I'm going to have to draw like a Stuka or something. And they're just shaped like pain.
What's the worst thing you've had to draw?
Oh,
like
probably
from a technical standpoint.
Probably a Spitfire for sure. Those things took me so long. I hate drawing hands.
That's kind of a complaint.
I just spent the last like 2 weeks drawing 6 pages from chapter 6 that like minor spoilers take place in an underground boxing ring.
Oh dear.
And I realized when I told my agent, I was like, yeah, no, this is going to be a good pitch packet. It's got like action. It's got fighting. It's got like character development. There's a fun new character. It's great. And then I started drawing it and realized that it's all crowd scenes. Everyone's hands are in every shot. There's like the weirdest poses in anatomy and they're boxers. So everyone's half naked and there's no clothes that can hide my sins. So
let's just draw some horses and bicycles and make it the absolute worst thing you've ever had to do.
I love drawing horses. That for me is like my happy place. Like I can draw horses all day. My like grad school thesis comic was Eastern European folklore, history, mythology, very into all of that. And I have a character who's a Cossack and he has his horse with him also because he's a Cossack.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in my grad program was like, oh my God, you have to draw a horse. That's so stupid. I was like, no, no, no. You don't understand. This is where I'm at my most powerful.
Bring me the horses.
Yes. Horses don't have hands. They have hooves. It's a friend. If you only embraced the power of the horse, then you could become unstoppable. But bicycles are hell. So cars, nothing.
Oh, that's so wild. It's funny that you mastered like an antiquated aircraft, but you're like, cars.
You gotta find a reason. Like I discovered early on in the comic practice that like the secret to learning to draw something is putting it in your comic. So like planes, I was groaning and griping about drawing the planes while I was doing it. In 2016, if you look at like a record of my social media, it's just me bitching about planes. Once you draw it for enough pages, then you can draw planes. Okay, freehand. I could probably freehand an okay plane right now. Don't ask me to do it. But like,
you're really cutting me off at the knees here.
Yeah, I also was like, I'm going to learn how to draw foxes because I have no idea how to draw foxes. So Reinicke has greatly improved my fox drawing abilities.
I was gonna say it doesn't show, but like
yeah, I mean, like you look at the rough passes that I did of like Reinica, and you would be like, "Is this a DAW? Like, what is happening? It's not good." But I got a lot better, and that's, you know, if you make it mandatory to the story, it turns out that you have to draw it. So there are, will be cars and nightclubs and a lot of things that I'm. It's going to be really cool after I've drawn it and when I'm good at drawing it, but right now I'm crying a little bit on the inside.
This is funny because it's like, oh, my boss is making me draw this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a separation of your duties.
God, my boss is such a bitch. She's making me draw all the stuff I don't want to. Yeah.
Have you ever tried your hand at just like writing for someone else to draw or drawing someone else's script?
I've done a few things. I've done some collaboration agreements. I find that I'm very stressed out, like within certain capacities of as long as I don't like care too much about the project, then it's okay. Like, I don't think I could let anyone else touch Hans Vogel. Like, at this point I would be okay, here's a 500 page document of background information that you would need to read and become passionate about if you want to work on this, because it's my baby. But I've been working with some other people for anthologies, and it really does cut down a lot when you don't have to write and draw everything. Cool.
So you have to deal with the other person.
Yeah, it turns out that
the one that wants you to draw boxing matches.
Yeah, that's the writer Sierra is like getting to be the writer is great, because then you can be as unhinged as you want. Like, you can just be like, okay, this scene, I want 10,000 horses on bicycles fighting 5,000 Spitfires with
driving cars.
Yeah, exactly. They're all holding very intricate machine guns, so deal with it. But drawing Sierra is not as stoked about everything that writing Sierra comes up with. It's constant negotiation of fucking around and finding out. It's just the one meme that's like me like sewing, hell yeah, hell yeah, and then me reaping, what the fuck, what the fuck.
Hello there, my name is Don Cardenas, and I'm here to invite you to check out my podcast, the 2021 Granty Award winning Comics Coffee Metal, where I interview creatives in, around, and about the worlds of, you guessed it, comics, coffee, and metal. I've already had such amazing guests on my show, including, but not limited to, Liana Kangas, Mike Norton, John O'Diener, Michael Conrad, Sophie Campbell, Guitar Max Carlisle, Andrew Baina, and of course, the Word Bros themselves, Bob and Kevin. Comics Coffee Metal is available on all the major podcast services, and you can find it directly at comicscoffeemetal.com. I hope to see you there, and now I return you to Into the Comics Cave with the amazing, awesome, talented, tall, handsome, what else did I say? Definitely over 6 feet tall, smells good like lavender and motorcycle grease. Is that right? Motorcycle grease? All right. Grant Stoy. There, I said it. Get my money now.
Now, see, I got a question for you.
Shoot.
So let's say that one day you are just, you know, at the museum, as you're prone to do with your giant notebook, and you're taking copious notes. And then all of a sudden, like a genie pops out of, say, some old uniform.
Sure.
The genie's like, Sierra, hey, so you're going to be one of the most prolific, efficient creators around. However, every time you draw, you're going to be followed around by this little troll. And every time you draw, it gets incrementally bigger. And you're the only one that can see this troll. And it never talks to you, but it breathes very heavily through its mouth. At what point are you going to retire from art?
How corporeal is the troll?
To you, 100% tangible.
Okay. I don't love it. I don't think that would change my output. I think I would do the same amount of stories, but it would stress me out very much.
So eventually, like, your office will be just full of this unblinking, wide-eyed, mouth-breathing troll.
That's why I do martial arts. Been preparing for this moment. I mean, you gotta be a little crazy to do comics, right? I mean, like, people are gonna think that you're strange for doing comics regardless of whether or not you have a troll. I might as well get something out of that deal. And, you know, pros and cons, right? There's gotta be a price for everything, and I'll just imagine, I'll make another story about how the troll is a manifestation of my self-confidence or something, and then one, I won't have to design a character, so that'll be easy. I'll constantly have a reference.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be great. And I'm assuming I don't have to pay this troll.
Nope. Just always following you.
Yeah, so free model. Pros and cons. I think I can make it work.
Would it change anything if it could talk to you?
That depends on what it would say. Because if it has absolutely rancid takes about things, then obviously I don't want to be followed around by that kind of troll.
Let's say that it just makes that noise when people chew with their mouth open.
Oh, like... God. Okay. No, absolutely. Okay. So then I'm like, yeah, I would retire from comics immediately. Sorry. That's it. That's my line.
That's what does it.
I like, no, sorry. I'd put that genie back in the uniform or whatever. Just be like,
sorry, you've won. I'm done. Sorry.
Yeah. Do you feel good? Do you feel good about that? Does that make you feel good?
I don't think the genie would feel very good. The genie would regret the decisions that led it to this museum.
I'd hope so. Think about what you've done in your bratty old uniform.
Stupid genie. I hate him. So, we are at the part where I'm going to ask you 5 questions we ask every guest.
Uh-oh.
These are based off 5 questions from James Lipton's Inside the Actor Studio. Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
I like this question when it comes to writer-artists, and it is, what is your favorite sequential arts sound effect?
Oh, man. Yes. Okay. I have a few of them. Yeah. I do my sound effects in German and English for Hans Vogel, so there are some good ones. One is Krnch, K-R-N-C-H.
Okay.
As like a punch or something breaking. The other one is Huch, which is a cough. Like some Huch, Huch.
Is that how Germans do their coughs?
Yeah. Like if you're gasping for air and you're coughing, you're hoo. There's not a good one that I was just looking at. Oh, I was looking up punching sound effects in German for this fight, and I got rum boom bam.
Oh, wow.
That's how I finished the fight, and that was just very fun. I spent probably about 30 minutes drawing, going room boom bomb under my breath. So it was a good time.
I never thought about, this is so stupid, I've never thought about other like sound effects in other languages.
It's really fun. I recommend looking up, like, just one, because it's fun to learn new things, but two, I find that it's a fun way to look at different sound effects and use different sort of phonetics that you might not otherwise use.
Yeah.
Like a gunshot in German says peng, P E, or an A with an umlaut NG. And now like peng instead of bang sounds like such an interesting, like peng sounds to me more like a ricochet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, that's wild. That's a really good idea.
That's a freebie.
Well, thank you very much.
There you go, yeah.
Number 2, what is something you love about sequential art?
I love everything about sequential art. I think it's the greatest thing that you can do whatever you want at the speed that you want. I love that you can, as a reader, you can control the speed at which the comic is read. I love, as a creator, that you can control everything that goes into it. If I want to draw an army of 5,000 Spitfires, I can do that. I don't have to have a budget or like CG. I can just draw that with my hands.
Whoa!
Yeah. And I don't, it's just such a unique way of storytelling that, you know, I don't know of any other kind of storytelling that you can have such an interesting juxtaposition of text and images. And one panel can be saying, you know, 500 different things just mm-hmm. by the relationship between the text and the images, and all of them can be conflicting. And I think that's neat.
And on the other side of that one, what is something about sequential art that you dislike?
I don't like having a wrist that is made out of like corporeal body parts that mm-hmm. needs to be like taken care of. Having a body is a problem. As far as like the actual media goes, I think the sort of the blessing and the curse of sequential art or any sort of visual storytelling is the power of stereotypes and how they're used.
Yeah.
And you know, Will Eisner talks a lot about the use of the stereotype, and it certainly is a good tool to have. But I think that it is also a tool that one has to be careful and responsible about. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone knows creators who have not necessarily been as careful and responsible with these tools as they maybe could have been. It's very much a great power comes great responsibility.
Absolutely.
Situation. But that's, you know, that's hardly unique to sequential art. But I think that it's definitely sequential artists have a history of struggling with.
Yeah. And number four, what is your favorite curse word that's not a curse word?
Curse word that's not a like something that you say.
Like a substitute swear word. And I'm calling this right now. Don't just say shit in German.
One of the rules that I made for myself with Hans Vogel is that Hans never swears. He's, if you like, look, well, even at his most surprised, I don't think he says anything stronger than mist, which is just sort of like crud.
Huh.
He's a very straight-laced little lad. It's just coked out on meth, but he won't say a bad word. I think I don't know if this counts, but I've been saying fuckaroonies a lot.
Well, that's legally fun.
That's fine, but I don't think that legally counts as the parameter. Fiddlesticks is a classic, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I would say that's an upper echelon grandpa swear.
Yeah, for sure. Gadzooks is also a good one. Underutilized in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're totally spot on.
Yeah.
I feel like
anything with Gadzooks, final answer.
Yeah, I like that. It's got some good hard consonants.
It's true.
So, bad news with number five.
Uh-oh.
You were trying to learn how to draw seahorses because you're like, land horses are great. Seahorses must be of the truth.
It makes sense, yeah.
However, what you didn't anticipate is that the male seahorses give birth to the babies, and that shocked you to your core, and you had 9 types of a heart attack, and you died underwater.
Oh, that's a bummer, yeah.
It's such a bummer. But you then go to what we perceive to be heaven when you're walking up to the pearly gate. Yeah, no kidding. You go straight to hell. It's
horrible. Well, it's real.
So when you get to heaven, you see this crotchety old man sitting next to a drafting board, just going to town on a bunch of different bubbles. He's got a cigar and bushy eyebrows, and you realize it's Jacob Kurtzberg, a.k.a. Jack Kirby.
If that's who I was gonna say.
What do you hope that he says to you?
Literally anything. I think it would be really everyone's goal to have him be like, I read your work and I liked it, I guess. But I mean, it's Jack Kirby, man. Like, I feel like I would just be sort of whiting out at that point anyway. Like, if I got to go to some kind of afterlife and meet, like, I have a laundry list of dead people I would like to talk to, you know, some nicer than others. Some of them I'd just be like, meet me in the pit. But Jack Kirby is definitely one of the ones that I like. I would have to have like a 2 or 3 rounds of talking with them to avoid just sort of hearing in my head. But yeah, I don't know, it's like he's a legend, right? He's like the
what would you do if he looked at you and he's like, it had to be Germans, huh?
I would be like, that's real. But also I would be like, no Nazi like a dead Nazi, am I right? I think he would think that was funny. I've thought it's funny this whole time, but I'm also like, is that maybe gauche? I don't know.
In this day and age, no. I think that is spot on and wonderful.
Oh, man. Yeah, in this day and age. Cries real tears. It's fine.
Well, Sierra, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Where can folks find you on the socials?
Yeah, I'm most active on Twitter, at Sierra Bravo Art, all one word, all lower caps. I'm on Instagram, but mostly I just post pictures of my rabbit, which are very cute. So, you know, if you want to check that out, it's at Sierra_Bravo_Art. I'm also on SierraBravoArt.com and lurking at a Boba Cafe near you. Probably.
Yeah. And where can folks find Hans Vogel is Dead?
You can find Hans Vogel is Dead on the internet at HansVogelIsDead.com, or you can find it through the Cast Iron Books website, where you can get yourself a physical copy. Just a big old book. Chunky. Perfect for hitting werewolves in the face.
Excellent!
Just in case.
Thank you so much for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for inviting me. This was great. 10 out of 10 experience.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @grantandstuff.